This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It all began with the Beach Boys. I'm a rock in a landslide, rolling over the mountainside. How deep is the valley? How deep is the valley? Oh. It kills my soul. Hey, hey, hey. In the late 1960s, fanzines like Crawdaddy promoted the genius of a group that most critics had long since dismissed as commercial surf and hot rod garbage. Later, music fans began to talk and write about other should-have-been classics among the ignored, overlooked, and underappreciated. For decades on, the art of rediscovery is alive and well with a new generation of self-published magazines. David Smay and Kim Cooper of the fanzine Scram are part of that tradition. As a testament to their love of lost classics, they co-edited a new book called Lost in the Grooves. Smay and Cooper are the first to admit that their tome, an unofficial guide to lost music, is not based on precise science. Rather, it's an attempt to give a host of records another chance. Later in the program, 'tis the season for flight delays. If you have questions about air travel, ask the pilot. But first, Lost in the Grooves. Dusted off any old 45s lately? What tracks and artists do you think deserve reconsideration? If you're a music geek, call and tell us how you discover obscure classics. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. David Smay and Kim Cooper join us now. David Smay from the studios of the University of California at Berkeley. Kim Cooper from NPR West. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Neil.
Tell us, what distinguishes your guide from, I have to say there are countless others out there. David, let's start with you.
We have no pretense to objectivity in this record guide. It's about passionate advocacy. It's about people who want to geek out enthusiastically about their favorites.
And Kim, how would you describe it?
I think that's much what I would say, too. I mean, we've drawn on so many zine people and musicians and novelists and just people who are incredibly passionate about things that usually slip through the cracks, and I think it's worth listening to them.
And David, when we say slip through the cracks, I mean, we're not talking about the truly awful music that's out there, the annoying music, if you will.
There is a lot of experimental music which never finds its audience, but we're both very conscious of the fact that there's a ton of great music that's very accessible, beautiful, gorgeous melodies, literate lyrics, hard rock and stuff, great funk grooves that just never breaks through. It's often a matter of luck or marketing, or at a certain time, geography really played a factor in that.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine, Kim, that there was a 250 pages in your book, and not room for everything. I'm sure you had to cut a lot of great stuff out.
Oh, sure. And people are already asking what's going to be coming out next.
Hmm. You're the founder, Kim, of Scram magazine. To what extent is this Lost in the Grooves, this aspect of rediscovery? Is that the soul of the magazine? Is the book and this idea an extension of the magazine?
Oh, absolutely. When I started Scram in the early 90s, there were a lot of really mean-spirited fanzines that took a lot of pleasure in just poking pins into people. And I thought, if I'm going to spend, you know, all the time and the trouble and my own money making this happen, let's just celebrate things. And it got easy to just dig out things that most people considered guilty pleasures, but I didn't think it was worth tagging them with that kind of code.
Well, guilty pleasures might be, a really great song by a bubblegum group, something like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have any examples of that?
We have essays in this book where people talk very seriously, absolutely unironically, about their love for the Pac-Man Fever album or Strawberry Shortcake. Or even Herman's Hermits has a great psychedelic album.
Well, let's hear some music. This is a group called Rock and Roll Friend from the Australian group The Go-Betweens.
Urgent, ancient motions now. Lovers have to do their laps. Come here, come hither, my only loved one. Do something about me. Do something about me.
Now, David Smay, I think this is an example of something you call a handshake band?
A secret handshake band. It's sort of the corollary to Anthony Curtis' lead-in about Nick Drake. If you talk to somebody about the Go-Betweens and they know the Go-Betweens and they love them, then there's sort of a secret handshake has passed between you. A lot of people find hardcore music fans to be exclusive, but there's also an inclusive element of finding people you never would have in their taste. And the Go-Betweens are almost the ultimate cult band. They never broke through despite the fact that they had two great songwriters, a very accessible sound, very smart, interesting lyrics.
And the handshake, meaning the secret ritual to be in the Skull and Bones or whatever it is.
Right, they're in the club. So, you know, they're in the club of good taste. But I told a friend to go get a Go-Betweens record, and she went into the record store, and as she went up there, the clerk who had never talked to her for 10 years of shopping there, you know, suddenly burst out talking about them, gave her a 10% discount. And, you know, it's like that. You have these moments of connection with people over your music.
Kim Cooper, David just used an interesting word there. He said record. When we're talking about rediscoveries, are we talking mostly vinyl here?
Not exclusively, but I think people who want to dig things out and not spend too much money are always headed to the thrift stores.
Okay. Give us a call if you have your nominees for underappreciated records that deserve a second chance, maybe even a CD. Our number is 800-989-8255. The email address, totn@npr.org. Let's take a call with Adam, and Adam's on the line from Tempe, Arizona.
Hi, Neil.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I love the topic. I love the whole idea. I was just listening to Love Forever Changes, which I think that band has been swept under and overlooked for years and years and years, and they're just one of my favorites of all time.
Mm-hmm. This was the lead guy was Arthur. What's his name?
Arthur Lee.
Arthur Lee. Okay.
Yeah.
Is Love and Arthur Lee, David Smay, are they nominees for Lost in the Grooves?
We would actually, at a certain time, I think they definitely were lost. I think there's been more attention to them. They did a whole live version of Forever Changes within the last year, I think, and the record has been reissued. But I think that they were definitely the kind of band that people held close to their hearts for a long time and felt like they'd been sort of lost. And he's right, Forever Changes is an absolute masterpiece of psychedelic pop.
I think one of the other things, too, is that you'll find more people now who are of a younger generation who know them and people who were listening to a lot of particular types of cool rock and roll in their time in the mid-60s have never heard of them unless they were from the West Coast or from L.A.
That's true.
And,
I think
I actually got a chance to go see him. I drove out to L.A. last few months ago and saw him play, and it was pretty strange experience to see Arthur Lee up there.
Yeah. Kim Cooper, though, Adam raises, this conversation raises an interesting point. Can some person or group be rediscovered to such an extent that they're no longer need rediscovery?
Oh, sure. Things pass in and out of the canon all the time. I mean, back in the 80s, we were all telling each other about Big Star, and now we don't really have to talk about them anymore. It just kind of goes without saying. But, you know, if Adam likes Love, he should probably dig out the Brian McLean solo albums that were rediscovered. They never came out at the time, but just wonderful stuff. That's the other main songwriter in Love.
Adam, thanks very much. And
thank you.
Do you have your Love recordings on vinyl or CD?
It's all on vinyl.
It's all on vinyl. That's what I thought.
It sounds better that way.
Thanks for the call, Adam. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's take another caller. This is Ed. Ed's in Akron, Ohio. Ed, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Hi. In the final credits of Serendipity with John Cusack, where he's catching snowflakes on his tongue, miraculously, I heard a song from Nick Drake, who has been dead for a generation. He succumbed to depression in his early 20s, but he was quite a phenomenal talent, a real musical genius. And I wonder if our guests have thought about artists like Nick Drake, who died young, but yet whose contribution to music is still rather unrecognized, I think, and certainly by the contemporary generation, apart from whoever selected that track for Serendipity.
Mm-hmm. David Smay, Nick Drake seems to be iconic for this movement.
Absolutely. And for a long time, very few people, I mean, there literally hundreds of people were listening to Nick Drake, but they were all hardcore fans. And then all of a sudden, it's in a Volkswagen commercial, and then he's everywhere. So we talk a lot about the process by which musicians and bands move from being in the cult bands to being in the canon. But we also talk about the ones that don't cross over, people like Gene Clark, who is the one of the lead songwriters with the Byrds and left early and produced a great series of solo records that never really caught on or achieved wider popularity.
Mm-hmm. Ed, thank
you. Kind of the converse of that is I saw recently that on BET, Smokey Robinson being defeated at a Walk of Fame, and the tribute that they gave him was really quite moving, because to have been, you know, young when Smokey was writing those Motown standards, it's kind of easy to dismiss people like that or forget what a, you know, monumental contribution they've made. And I suppose that's just the opposite of what your guests are trying to highlight, but it does seem that sometimes either obscurity or ironically success itself can hide musical genius.
Ed, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And Ed was calling from Akron. Our executive producer, who is from Akron, nominates a band from that city in Ohio by the name of Tin Huey. Does Tin Huey twig any memories, Kim Cooper?
You know, I always used to see it in the bins, but I never picked it up. I can picture the cover.
And you're missing an undiscovered classic.
I'll look for them. Thank you.
The guys in Tin Huey actually went on to form The Waitresses, so one of the lead songwriters there. So when you're listening to Christmas Wrapping this year, I know that that was written by a man who had been in Tin Huey. So they were one of the great art pop bands out of that Akron scene.
Another category, it seems, of music that you're talking about is music by one-hit wonders that might have been, should have been considered. This is a tune from Bobby Gentry.
Glass enclosed, exposed wherever I live. No control and a crystal soul that one could see right through. No ethereal nest where I could rest. I was frightened by what I knew, that my two crystal legs were broken in two.
And Kim Cooper, that is Refractions. Nobody remembers Refractions. All we remember of Bobby Gentry is Ode to Billy Joe. How come?
You know, it's a mystery to me. I didn't know how amazingly cool her sort of fusion of psychedelic symbolism and Faulkner-esque imagery and funk was until I got an Australian compilation. She did a lot of really cool records, but I think Ode to Billy Joe was just such a huge hit. And Capitol didn't know what to do with her. She was very smart and very eclectic as an artist.
And so presented with this confusion, they just fumbled the ball?
I think they promoted how pretty she was, and they had her do some duets with Glen Campbell. And, you know, she did well. She had other hits. But they didn't really promote her as a singer-songwriter. And
she was a big influence on Lucinda Williams has cited her, and I think they have they share a similarity of being between genres and difficult to market in that way.
There are plenty of other one-hit wonders out there who I guess never had the chance to make the psychedelic album in the late 60s. There's an awful lot of people that never did, whatever became of Little Eva after she did Locomotion. I mean, there's got to be some undiscovered classics that maybe she sang to herself in the bathroom, because as far as anybody knows, she never recorded them. We're talking about the book Lost in the Grooves, which chronicles records you may never have heard, but should. And we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We'll go into our break with music from the incredible Moses Leroy, an artist that critics loved but no one heard. This track is called It's Better, and it's from his album Electric Pocket Radio from 2001. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing hidden musical gems, many of which are chronicled in a new book called Lost in the Grooves. Our guests are David Smay and Kim Cooper, who co-edited this book. They're both with Scram magazine. David Smay joins us from the studios of the campus of the University of California at Berkeley. Kim Cooper at NPR West. Of course, you're invited to join us. What's your favorite underappreciated album or artist? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And let's play one of the more curious selections that David Smay and Kim Cooper sent us. I won't tell you the name of the album, so I don't give it away, but this song is called Gentle Things from 1965. It's a very quiet record so far.
Fog gently blankets the ground. Turn on your lights and slow down. But when it's stormy and dark and the temperature drops, the smart driver always stops.
It's important to adjust your driving habits to driving conditions. Expert drivers do.
All terrifically good advice, especially on a day when people are driving in droves and it's snowing through the Midwest. Kim Cooper, who is that?
Chevrolet sings of safe driving in you. And having gotten you to play that on national radio, I can die happy.
Your ambitions are interesting, Kim. Where did that come from?
Well, I found it at the Goodwill for a quarter. As far as I can tell, it was probably given away by Chevrolet to new car buyers who had teenagers at home around 1965.
So you found it at a bin at Goodwill Industries. Is that where you go to find lost classics?
It has been ever since I was a little kid. I found my first favorite records in a garbage can, and I've never stopped.
David Smay, where are your favorite haunts for this sort of thing?
Oh, I'll go anywhere for music. I don't really care what form it comes in. I'll get it off, you know, iTunes or eBay or, you know, through a garage sale, whatever is handy. I just, you jones for the music. You got to go track it down.
But if you're buying a lot of records, essentially, you've never heard of, or records by famous artists you have heard of that are less well-known, there's going to be a few turkeys in there, Kim.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I came up with the three reasons rule.
The three reasons?
Yeah. You have to find three reasons to pick something up. And it can be anything from liking the cover to recognizing the producer to a really deranged song title. You just have to have three reasons to pick up something that you know nothing about.
Here's an email from Mike in St. Augustine, Florida. The public library is a wonderful place to check out music you might never otherwise consider. World music, rock and roll acts, jazz, everything. It's free. And if you like it, then wow, I've discovered so much great stuff from the library, from the Yingling soloists to Graham Parker, you name it. Been to the library, David?
Absolutely. I did that a lot in the 80s when I was younger and more poor, but now I can afford to go and actually invest in the records. There are plenty of used record stores where I keep my collection moving and mobile, so if I don't like it, I throw it back.
Okay. Let's get another listener on the line, and Ed is with us from Walla Walla, Washington.
Wow. This is such a great topic. I'm going to mention a record that even the history for us is the people who have heard it, that my friends have heard. It's just bizarre. My friend had this record. It's called Sweet from the Other End of Town, I believe is the title, and it's by somebody named Bonnie White. But every time I look up anything for this person, all I get is a Christian singer, and it's not this album. And his copy got borrowed and put near a heater and melted. He taped it for me, and I ended up taping over half of it by accident by hitting the record button the wrong way. The album is unbelievable. It's got jazz in it. It's got folk. It's got rock elements, just all sorts of odd commingling. And it's just unbelievably beautiful. And I'm going nuts trying to find it anywhere because, as far as I know, I can't find it.
Ed, you're a klutz.
What's that?
You're a klutz.
What's that? I still can't understand what you said.
I was blaming you for the loss of this great music. Have either of you rescued Bonnie White?
What's that?
No, Bonnie White is news to me, but if that warped record is still around, if you put it between a couple of sheets of glass in the oven on a low temperature, it can sometimes be salvaged.
How low is low?
Maybe like 250.
250.
Keep an eye on it. And then put some heavy like books on top and let it really
Or Ed, did
fasten
you,
down.
Ed, you don't have to worry about your books being cooked, at least in that respect.
Afterwards.
Yes. Ed, have you still got the record, or have you thrown it away?
I have the record. I have friends who are record collectors. I have all my stuff on tape, and he had it, and I think it was pretty well to actually having a new topography going on. It was completely altered. By the way, you were talking about public libraries. It's worth noting that a lot of public libraries are selling off some of their old music on vinyl these days. So if you go there, you can find stuff incredibly cheap sometimes.
Okay, Ed, thanks very much.
You bet.
Kim and I are both big fans of Friends of the Library sales.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that advice about Warp Records is great. I have a pretty obscure Lonnie Mack album, and I haven't had the heart to throw it away after I left it in the back of the car and the sun got to it. But I still have it, so maybe I can cook it in my oven now.
You can fix that, Memphis man.
Here's an email from Matthew Van Dam in Zeeland, Michigan. I would like to hear comments on how people feel after a band that has been below the radar becomes mainstream and popular. I know I become resentful when this happens, and I get upset by people who haven't been listening for a long time suddenly jumping on the bandwagon. Case in point, Wilco's Yankee Hotel Foxtrot album. David?
That's a classic dynamic, and you know, I think Kim and I both have tried to resist that. It's very easy to get swept up and feel possessive for music, and the impulse for the book is completely the opposite, is to try and share it and spread it out. But that's a classic dynamic for any band that's trying to break from maybe a small label up to a major label. There's a lot of resentment that goes on. People feel very protective about their bands, but that can have a negative side effect.
Kim, is there an element of hipper than thou in all of this, that no matter what everybody says they like, we'll find something more obscure to like?
Oh, I hope not. I mean, if you start getting that sort of attitude, it just isn't fun anymore.
Hmm. David, let me ask you about a review you wrote of an Atlantic Records producer named Jerry Williams, also known as Swamp Dog. Why did he make the cut?
Swamp Dog is a classic soul artist. He was a producer for Atlantic Records. He was very experienced. He had a great singing voice. He was one of those guys that worked in the studio. And about the time that a number of musicians were moving from the studio, they're creating a public persona like Dr. John. People were moving out of the studio and taking on a public do their own records. He did the same thing, but he only recorded on very small labels where he could control the situation. He had a great singing voice. He read very tart, pungent lyrics. He was a very cranky character, but he was also very heartfelt, and his music is amazing. He had great, tight soul bands backing him always on his stuff.
Well, let's take a listen. This is the aptly titled You Say You Trust Your Mother from 1972's Cuffed, Collared, and Tagged.
You say you trust your mother, but still you cut the cords. You say you have faith in all your friends, but you count your change twice as hard. You pledge allegiance to the flag, though this country's not united at all. You say you want to help your fellow man, yet you step on him when he falls. You say you trust your mama. You say that you trust your mama.
But you still cut the cards. I think he gets there eventually. That's good stuff, David.
Yeah, he's a great singer. That song is very apropos. It's a song about loving your country, but feeling alienated from it at the same time.
Hmm. Kim, this may seem like an obvious question. Why is it important that songs like that are not forgotten?
Because they're wonderful, and because people, when they hear them, get really excited, and it enriches their lives.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. Aaron is with us from Egg Harbor, Wisconsin.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Very well.
I don't know if you can hear this or not, but take a listen to this.
Yes, my love. Just
we, can you guess who it is?
Vaguely Elvis-y.
No, actually, it's Eddie Cochran.
Eddie Cochran, Summertime Blues. I remember him.
Yes, but he's much more than Summertime Blues. He was a studio musician, an excellent guitarist, and he was the reason that Mick Jagger entered rock and a host of other British rockers. He's pretty much undiscovered still, except for that one song.
Summertime Blues being that one song. Kim Cooper, is Eddie Cochran amongst the artists who've been lost in the grooves?
You know, he's not in the book, but I'm not at all surprised that there's some great stuff there. He died young, and that's probably part of the reason that he hasn't been remembered as well as he should be.
21 years old, and he died 2 weeks after he did the song Three Steps to Heaven with his fiancée, Sharon Sheely, who was the youngest number one songwriter. She wrote Poor Little Fool for Ricky Nelson.
Sharon Sheely is a very interesting person in the history of pop music. We could have written a whole book on her.
Oh, yeah. There should be a movie about her. She's great.
I grew up in her neighborhood, and they were still telling stories about the parties she and her mom used to throw.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm an Elvis impersonator, but I'm a huge Eddie Cochran fan.
Maybe you should impersonate Eddie.
Yeah.
I wish I could. That's why I want him to be. I'm starting to write a screenplay about him, and I'd like him to be. I'd love to be able to do an Eddie show.
Aaron, thanks very much for the call, and good luck, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Here's an email we got from Andrew Woodward. Describes himself as a bassist in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm a great fan of early Motown, most especially the Funk Brothers, Motown's house band behind the Holland Dozier, Holland Tunes of the Supremes and the Jackson 5. David, didn't they just make a movie about them?
Yeah, they did. And that's another aspect of this kind of fandom is that Kim talked about her Three Reasons rule. One is that you start recognizing the house bands that never got any play. I would note for him, if he's a fan of that stuff, there was a great compilation put out by Motown a couple of years ago called Cellar Full of Motown. It was all unreleased tracks. It's almost like an alternate universe of Motown tracks, and it's all with James Jamerson and those great musicians playing on them.
Here's an email we got from Michael Van Olden. I'm a rare funk soul record collector. I have nearly 10,000 vinyl albums stacked high in my bedroom. My main interest is in rare fun grew from listening to early hip-hop. As you may know, a great deal of early hip-hop was based on old records that were sampled and rapped over. He said, I would like to nominate a band called Psymandy. Like Jimi Hendrix, the eight members of Psymandy were all phenomenally adept self-taught musicians, and also like Hendrix, they were masters at synthesizing funk, soul, blues, and psychedelic sounds, creating music that resists any conventional or convenient labeling. Kim, is rap and Psymandy old enough to qualify for Lost in the Grooves?
Sure. We've got some records in this book that are only a couple of years old. Things get lost fast these days.
Speaking of rap, there's a track called 12-Sided Dice from Canadian artists called Dream Warriors.
I've got the prophet of brain, supernatural high, multiplied by the galactic vigilante strength twice. What's your answer, Dungeon Master?
Unimaginable Nova Blast on the face of this earth.
Then you got that right. I'm the tow truck of the soul that I create around you. I get you hyper, so forever and ever, this will be spreading across the lyrical way. I am the way. I will take the weak out, put my thoughts right in them, then roll them.
David Smay, Canadian rap?
Yeah, they came out of Toronto, and that particular song is they're rapping about role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons, which is not your usual rap material.
No, it was one of the few rap songs that we really didn't have to worry about any nasty language in there.
Well, that wasn't like a criteria for the book. We have some plenty nasty rap records covered in the book. But we were interested in styles, you know, that go out of style, and that's from the early '90s when there were a number of bands that had a very intelligent, jazzy kind of a style, very literate, funny, playful, and not aggressive and in your face. We're not opposed to that kind of music. I'm just saying different kinds of music go out of style, and that's an example of one. It's a very playful, fun group.
We're talking about music that has been underappreciated and lost in the grooves. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Matt is calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Matt.
How you doing? It's funny, you're talking about different styles that go out, because what I was going to talk about was the fact that my favorite lost music is from an era that came in and out quickly, which is the New Wave movement. And my favorite lost music is from a band called The Flirts. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They did an album called 10 Cents or Dime a Dance.
Kim Cooper, can you help us out here?
You know, I never heard The Flirts, David.
Oh yeah, they did. They had a number of songs about being on the jukebox. They're a new wave band, that kind of power pop new wave, very catchy, danceable stuff. We have a fair number of new wave groups in the book. That's also a favorite era from me. But that era has sort of been reclaimed recently. That's been a big influence on a number of bands that have been recording in the last couple of years. There's a big new wave sound, and even the most recent Strokes record and Fountains of Wayne have a lot of the early Cars has turned out to be very influential for a lot of pop stuff.
Hmm. Okay, Matt, we'll wish you luck with the flirt.
Well, one thing about if I could say one more thing about this, I think the era of that music was right when everybody was going from vinyl to CD. And a lot of that music was only out on vinyl at the same time that CDs became very, very popular. And I think that's one of the reasons we lost a lot of that music from that era.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Matt, for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
And we're going to try something a little bit different now. This next one is called Yep Rock Harisi, and it's from the 1940s Hepcat Slim Gaylord.
Yep Rock Harisi Arg Burgl Makshi Yep Rock Harisi Kibisini Kibibet Lahomisha Way Adet Yep Rock Harisi Burgl Moxie and Jelly too. Yaprak Harisi Kibisi Vauti Ilaho Ilaho Mishoe.
David, what is he talking about?
Singing off a Middle Eastern menu, actually, in that particular song. So Slim Gaylord is really the coolest guy who ever lived. Miles Davis looked up to him. Neil Cassidy idolized him. Jack Kerouac wrote him into On the Road. He's just an incredible figure, a very handsome man, very charismatic. But his music is completely goofy and giddy and playful and rhythmically relentless. And almost everything he did is just a pleasure to hear.
I think, was he responsible for Swing Low, Sweet Cadillac?
That was from the same era of the sort of jive talking beboppers. That might have been Dizzy Gillespie, but he did Flatfoot Floogie, which was originally Flatfoot Floozy.
Mm-hmm.
Floy Floy is not something you want to catch.
So the important point being that these musical offerings are not dated to any time, period, or genre.
We tried to stretch it out on the book, and we purposely made the book alphabetical in structure, so there would be a lot of sparks thrown off between eras and genres. People get very trapped in their own taste, really, and we kind of wanted to throw off some sparks that way.
Kim, let me ask you, what is the most recent undiscovered classic you have found?
Well, I've been discovering older stuff just from this book, because I've been reading all the essays and tracking things down, and it's not that new, but I got really turned on to Tony Joe White from James Porter's essay.
Okay.
And I'm really digging the swamp rock right now.
Thanks to both of you. We appreciate your joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely a pleasure.
And have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Kim Cooper and David Smay are co-editors of the new book, Lost in the Grooves. Kim Cooper joined us from the studios at NPR West in Los Angeles. David Smay was with us from a studio on the campus of the University of California at Berkeley. You can find a link to Lost in the Grooves website on our website, that's npr.org. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk about air travel. I think a few of you may be involved in some of that this weekend, from the bizarre to the nitty-gritty. If you have questions, well, ask the pilot. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.